This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Obviously, the other part of the Rex Heerman story is Rex Heerman. He spent nearly 3 years fighting every single charge that was being brought against him, and then living more than 20 incognito, if you will. His defense team lost every motion, DNA, separate trials, the entire framework challenge. Then in a 30-minute hearing, the man who swore he didn't do it pled guilty to 7 murders and admitted to an 8th victim nobody knew was coming. His attorney called it a calculated pivot. But what did Heerman actually gain by making it? And is he accepting responsibility or managing the narrative one final time? Bob Monta, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, is with Robin and myself as we break all this down. Let's talk about that, the calculated pivot. Like every pretrial motion was denied, the DNA challenge, the motion to separate the cases, the all of it. When a defense attorney loses every legal avenue that they have, what does the calculus actually look like behind the closed doors? And how much of this decision do you think was Heerman saying, okay, it's time to come clean, versus his attorney going, we ain't got no roads to go down here, my friend?
I think it was a combination of both.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, whether or not he's going to plea is completely Heerman's decision.
Sure.
All his attorney could do is advise him. But yeah, after you, because you have two things going against you. One, you have the weight of the evidence and the strength of it, and you know, any competent attorney looking at it and say, we got problems here. Look, I'm going to try to get I'm going to file some motions to suppress. I'm going to try to do some different things. The motion to sever was huge. You know, I mean, when they lost that, you know, when you have the cases bootstrapped to one another, you know, it creates an almost unwinnable situation, because that helps boost along the cases that may not have as much powerful evidence as the other ones, because you're trying them all at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, jurors aren't going to be able to compartmentalize those cases in their head as they're hearing all the evidence coming in. They're going to look at them as a group, even though there may have been years in between the homicides. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's that shit that Robin loves. It's the psychology. Oh, it really is. You know, so when you lose that motion to sever, and you know they're trying all the cases together, that's a massive gut blow. But on top of that, when you find out all the DNA is coming in, like it's the one too, right? You DNA is coming in, we're screwed here. And then the other part of it is they're trying all these cases together. A good attorney is going to go to his client and say, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Pardon my French, but we are absolutely screwed here. We are not going to win this thing. So the ball's in your court, Rex. What do you want to do with it? You know, and again, we talked about this last week a bit, but the fact that they don't have that carrot to dangle,
yeah,
that death penalty to pull off the table, it becomes interesting. And I think that we were talking about it, and I was curious to see whether or not this was going to be a plea deal, or what was just going to be a change of plea, which we talked about last week being different things. And ultimately it was kind of a hybrid.
Yeah.
It's definitely a change of plea, but you know, Tierney went to him and said, look, you know, here's what we want, you know, and I'll try to make some concessions. I'm not moving on years at all. Mm-hmm. You're doing all the time. I'll drop a few of the charges or some of the counts, but you're going to be doing the time for each and every victim. And ultimately, you know, I think either way, Heerman was pleading out, no matter whether Tierney was going to offer or not, because there was that big question. I kept all my friends in the industry, cops, like everybody, Heerman's going to go up there and spill it all. I'm like, no, he's going to go up there and just say he's guilty, you know, and it's surprising to me when I see attorneys that practice criminal law, like, get kind of sucked into the, you know, just the excitement of it, for lack of a better term.
Sure.
Yeah. And actually, you know, talking about the spilling it all, you know, that's what actually is a little surprising to a lot of people. I think it was actually he's spilling anything. So when he pled, you know, cause we talked about this last week as well, his only currency he has right now to better his life in any way, because this whole move, I still think, is 100% about him not trying to spare his family or wife, because if he wanted to do that, he would have stopped killing people. but it was maintaining his control of knowledge, control of information, things he did. Yet he got up there on this, you know, when he's, you know, changing a plea, and he actually spilled a little information about, you know, how he did these things and through strangulation. Were you surprised by that at all? And what do you think he's going to do at sentencing, more or less or nothing?
Sorry, I was here. My wife had to sneak by to get her shoes out of the car. I was listening to every word.
Hi, Allie.
Look, I mean, the sentencing's pretty much pro forma. The victim impact panels are going to, or statements are going to be huge. You know, they're going to be highly emotional. And those are everything that's going to happen in your typical sentencing is going to happen in terms of any kind of movement on the sentencing. I mean, we know what he's getting. He's getting.
Do you think he's going to spill anything more details? Because he talked about strangulation and how he did it. You don't think he's going to be quiet on it?
I didn't think it then, and I don't think it now. We talked about this, Robin, and again, this is really in your wheelhouse, man. I mean,
oh yeah, I don't think he's going to say anything. That's why I was asking you.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that the dude has, the last vestige of power he has, is control. Mm-hmm. That's the information.
Let's talk about Karen Vergata. That's the mother of two from Manhattan who disappeared in 1996. It kind of it puts another murder smack dab in the middle of that time span from 93 to 2000, where people were wondering, like, did he stop doing his things or was he just not caught? It shows that, no, he didn't stop. There's at least one other one in the middle there. Gonna guess there's probably more, too, but there's another one. Her remains were found in pieces across Fire Island near Gilgo Beach years apart. He was never charged with the murder. It was folded into the plea agreement with no separate prosecution. Explain this one to me, Bob, because we were talking last week, like, how are they going to do this exactly? Explain to me how exactly they did do this.
Well, I mean, essentially what they're going to have to do. So it was obviously part of some discussions that were taking place.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know what Tierney was able to say to Huerman to get him to kind of bite on that and just say, look, man, you know, just give us Vergata. Like, there was some kind of in-depth conversation. I would have loved to have been
wall
to hear it. But ultimately, what they did when they folded the Vergata thing into the plea, it really forecloses further prosecution on that act. So essentially, the benefit that Huerman gets is that even though he's – so essentially, they're going to have to formally charge him because you can't mm-hmm. – you can't convict somebody of something they haven't been charged with. So that's going to happen in the interim. Mm-hmm. It's going to get formally charged. And then when it was folded into the plea, so he might not necessarily have to even say it again. But if I'm the judge, I'm probably going to just, once he's formally charged, I'm probably going to ask him again, you know, just so you're pleading guilty to, you know, whatever the case number is going to be on that one. But I mean, look, at the end of the day, if what mattered to Rex, and we were really trying to delve into this last week too, in terms of, you know, why would this guy plea, you know, and if we all landed on, there's no way in hell it was to benefit the victims' families. He's not trying to spare them anything. And we all kind of landed on, seems like it might maybe somewhere in deep, 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 deep inside of his soul, he cares about his wife and his kids, you know, and he didn't want to put them through the nightmare of the trial. I mean, it's really the only thing that I can land on, but it's hard to give him the benefit of doubt to even assume that he has any kind of decency. Just
yeah, I don't think so. Go ahead, Tony, and then I want to go.
Okay. Just a quick thought on that. Here's how I've been thinking about it this week. It's like the end of a movie. It's like the end of Back to the Future 2, where there's like a little tease for the third one. You're like, I wasn't expecting that one coming. It feels to me like that. It's like, okay, you got me. I'm going to go down for these. But did you know about this one? Almost like, hey, there's more to come, kids, because I think he's in the last couple of years, he's probably kind of gotten used to this new lifestyle of not having to hide it all. It's out in the open. People know who he is. He's kind of digging the attention. And if he can put a little carrot out there for the society that's watching him in the cage that, hey, you thought I was done. There's far more than you know about. It brings even more attention to him because it's not just resolving these seven. Suddenly there's an eighth. And if there's an eighth, how many more are there?
And that's what I'm thinking too. You know, especially so here's a man whose health is failing as they've seen him the last couple times in his court. So he's fallen apart. And so his chances of getting away with this are zero because of what his lawyer's saying. And so when you think about this, so here's the analogy. Think about a very, very extremely wealthy person. Does throwing down a couple hundred or a couple thousand or even more money really mean anything if you actually have all this money in the bank? Because remember, his currency is information. So he was charged with seven. And he seemed, everyone's shocked that he's actually threw down an eighth and being willing to include it. Well, a wealthy man doesn't matter to them. And so the probability of him having more in that bank, I think, is extremely high, because I think that was a real tell saying there's more there. Because otherwise, remember, his only thing left he has in life is the knowledge that he has and no one else does. So why would you give, if that was the last person that's associated, why would you give the last thing you have in the bank just at the change of plea?
Yeah, which is why I said he was never going to do anything like he was thinking he was going to do in terms of spilling.
He's wealthier than we think, is what I think it is.
He's got a mental wallet full of bodies.
He does. So. And it's interesting because, I mean, when you think about kind of the, you know, Gacy went through a trial, but I mean, that dude never fessed up. You know, he never fessed up. And I'm of the same mindset with Huerman that I am with Gacy. And I think that there's additional victims because there's that gap. Mm-hmm. There's a gap for Gacy. It was a 4-year gap from when they know that his first known victim was killed. And then from when his next victim is killed, you know, there's this gap in time. And that's when Carol was living in the house. You know, he wouldn't just haywire. He was off the rails as soon as the divorce took place. You know, it was a free for all. But like the other thing that I want to talk about, kind of go back to Tony's point, you know, and I think the other thing that's interesting is the fact that the amount of tension and anxiety and stress, and I don't give a shit how much of a sociopath you are. I mean, the fact of the matter is we know from his hard drive, getting caught was a major concern for him. Mm-hmm. So when once it's over and that stress and tension lifts, it goes right along with what you're saying, you know, because that's a long time to live on the run, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a stressful way to live.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
I want to get your thoughts on this. Me and Robin and Coffendaffer were talking about this the other day, about how much of a carrot was it that the BAU, the Behavioral Analysis Unit, was actually worded into the plea agreement here that he's going to cooperate with them and he'll be studied. Now, obviously, the BAU is going to go in no matter what. It's not like you really have a huge choice in this matter for somebody like this. But I'm wondering, how much do you think it was a carrot on a stick for him to go, oh, well, I'm that important that you wanna come talk to me? I'm wondering if it kind of worked in a weird way here, not as a threat, not as a, we're going to dive into you and figure you out, but more like, I'm a celebrity and I'm getting celebrity treatment now in his own weird ecosystem.
Yeah, I take it a different way. I think that was tossed in there more as a carrot to the families because, you know, I mean, we don't know. And I was actually... I was thankful that what's her face stood up there. I always forget her name. The attorney who handled some of the was representing the victims' families. Somebody, the attorney of the old time, Gloria Aldred. Yeah. So when she steps up and she basically has or speaks on behalf of the family members that they're fine with this, that they're good with it, they're in support of this thing getting pled out as opposed to going to trial, because that's one of the things you always wonder. You know, do the families want that person to sit in that chair and squirm? And do they want to hear all the details or do they not? So for me, I was thankful that she came up and said those things because it really kind of gave me some insight into it. And I think that from Tierney's perspective, I think that would help soften the blow if you had family members that were very much wanting him to stand trial. Like, look, I know, but we talked this guy into helping, like, we're, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's a pretty nice pitch to put out there.
Yeah.
I like that, Bob. I like that a lot. I think that carries a lot of weight. I wonder if part of that with the discussion with the families, whether they told them that we will share what we find with you if you want to know it too.
Yeah.
Because those are things. And I mean, when you think about this, it makes it so that they can hear and get some closure without it being on a public forum necessarily as well. It'll be researchable and it'll be open source and things like that they can get access to, because this is what BAU does. They provide research for organizations and other great crime fighters out there. But I hadn't thought about that angle of it. I think it's a really poignant one. I think I'm glad they're doing it for that reason, no doubt.
Yeah, I think of it from that angle, yeah.
I'm guessing. But I mean, to me, that would be why they would include it, whether it's true or not. And I hope that it is true. You know,
maybe it's a little bit of everything.
And
honestly,
if not, you can make it true now. You know, if people are paying attention to this, I think the families then need to say, hey, that's a frigging great idea. I want to know or I don't want to know. I mean, it gives them the choice without having it broadcast and have to listen to it. That's what I really like. It's victim focusing. Here's an opportunity that you can learn more, but you don't have to learn more. Whatever you need for closure, and you won't have closure on this in the life, no one ever does, but be able to continue to move forward in your life and move through, I should say.
100%, man.
Now they just need to bring back another season of Mindhunter, because...
Yeah. It's dead in the water, man. It's like, I keep hearing and then they just fall away. It's weird. It was such a great show.
I know. It's got its Emmy nominated. It's like bring it back. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts on that. And press subscribe to Bob's podcast, Defense Diaries, wherever you get podcasts.
And Buried.
And Buried.
AC investigation. It's my life's work. It's like,
yes,
I really want people to listen to it. It's a phenomenal podcast. It's unlike anything you've ever heard.
So. It is. It's very good.
Love it.
Buried.
I'm pressing it again. I'm moving back on it. I refuse until the whole world's listened to it. So
and, that's all you want, the whole world. And then get them all to buy my book.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes, in Robin's book here.
Like, you know, if you listen to the full podcast, we'll give you Robin's book.
Welcome to QVC.
That's right.
Today we have a delicious book here from Robin. It's not all about me. This is bursting with country fresh flavor.
It's about
Bob. Anything you've ever had.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.